Welcome to Irregular Climate, where we take a look at the irregular climate in our atmosphere and the irrational climate of global warming denialism. On this week's show, a recap of the climate news that happened during our summer hiatus, including the Russian fires and Pakistani floods, the Inter-Academy report on the IPCC, the Lomborg U-turn, more Moncton madness, Cuccinelli is thrown out of court, and the icy skeptic debunk of the week. I am Dan Mutal. First of all, I have to apologize. My summer hiatus wasn't supposed to be this long, but things have been hectic around here, and even though I wish irregular climate could be my number one priority, it can't. It doesn't pay the bills. So it has been forced on the back burner. But thankfully, things are calming down, and future episodes should be released more or less on time. Hopefully. There isn't much to say about the floods in Pakistan and the fires in Russia that hasn't already been said. Russia was absurdly warm and on fire, and Pakistan was devastated by flooding. And both of these disasters were related, caused by a stalled jet stream. The question that has been asked is, were these disasters caused by global warming? The problem is that that is a very tricky question. Neither floods nor heat waves are unheard of. They happen even without global warming. This question inevitably comes up whenever there's extreme weather. For example, it came up after Hurricane Katrina, and the standard response was that a single weather event cannot be attributed to global warming. After all, a big hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico is not unheard of. But at some point, as we pump more and more CO2 into the atmosphere, we will experience weather that we haven't seen before. And the fires and heat wave in Russia and the floods in Pakistan are extraordinary in a way that Hurricane Katrina wasn't. The IPCC is not perfect. That should come as no surprise to anyone. But that imperfection does not mean the IPCC reports cannot be trusted. What it means is that efforts should be made to reduce those imperfections. And the Inter-Academy Council, a coalition of national science organizations, was tasked with doing just that. Their report recommends that a new executive be created that is able to speak for the IPCC in between reports, a new communication strategy in regards to uncertainty and dealing with any errors that may be found within the report, better consistency among working groups, and ideas on how to reduce the burden on lead authors in responding to the rapidly increasing review comments. These recommendations all seem fair enough and could improve the IPCC process, although those wanting the IPCC to slim down and become more nimble, perhaps releasing smaller reports more often, have criticized these recommendations as just adding more bureaucracy and burdening the IPCC down even more. But the award for the most humorous reaction to the Inter-Academy Council report has to come from Mark Morano, who said, "The inquiry into the UN IPCC process by the Inter-Academy Council is everything the previous ClimateGate whitewashes should have been." So, presumably, this means that Morano agrees with the report, and agrees with the conclusion of the report, which, in its first sentence, states that the committee concludes that the IPCC assessment process has been successful and overall has served society well. Oops. Perhaps Morano skipped over that part of the report. Or, more likely, he was betting that you would. Because if you happened to read that sentence, you would instantly realize how dishonest Morano truly is. Not that that should really come as a shock to anyone, but such is the state of discourse we find ourselves in. any admission of imperfection by the science side is used by the deniers as proof of profound corruption. Can you imagine if they applied that standard to themselves? Bjorn Lomborg is back in the news, claiming that global warming is undoubtedly one of the chief concerns facing the world today, and a challenge that humanity must confront. That's quite a U-turn for the self-proclaimed skeptical environmentalist. First, a quick recap. Lomborg is the author of The Skeptical Environmentalist and the book Cool It. And while he claims to accept the consensus position and the IPCC conclusions, he routinely misrepresents both of them. He twists the truth and bends fact so often that a website, www.lomborg-errors.dk, and a book, The Lomborg Deception, have sprung up to try and set the record straight. And doing so is an enormous task. So while Lomborg continues to misrepresent the science and underestimate the damages of global warming, it is good to hear him say that climate change is undoubtedly one of the chief concerns facing the world today, and a challenge that we must confront. Now, if only he had a sensible solution. What does he propose? A small tax on fossil fuels, enough to raise roughly $100 billion a year globally. Now, that might sound like a lot, but globally, we use a massive amount of fossil fuels, so it would only take a very small tax to raise the $100 billion. This prompted Jonathan Lash, the president of the World Resource Institute, to say, "It sounds like someone who does not think we should do anything about climate change, now finding reasons why we shouldn't do very much." Under Lomborg's plan, the money raised by the tax would be used to fund research and development into low-carbon energy sources, with the ultimate goal of lowering their price and make them competitive with traditional fossil fuel-based energy. The first thing to note is that while Lomborg's acceptance of the importance of dealing with global warming is new, his proposal is not. In fact, he mentioned something similar back in January, and for all I know, even before then. But I doubt his plan will be effective at reducing greenhouse gas emissions in sufficient quantities and quickly enough to avoid the worst of the predicted effects of global warming, for one simple reason. It doesn't leverage the free market, and therefore is woefully inadequate. Charles Komanoff at the Carbon Tax Center wrote, "The notion of an R&D solution is alluring. Who doesn't want there to be global warming antidotes lurking in garages and labs, waiting for funding to unlock them?" But it's a chimera. Even with unlimited research funding, no technological breakthroughs can dislodge carbon-based fuels from dominion over the world's energy economy. Fossil fuels' energy density is too great, and their positional advantages of infrastructure and institution is too powerful. Yes, subsidies can help push renewables past the hump in the S-curve to where economies of scale can kick in and take a few bites out of the fossil fuel pie. Government subsidies just don't pack the same punch as a market price on carbon pollution. When a commodity or activity causes harm, the surest way to reduce it isn't to subsidize 1,001 alternatives, but to directly discourage the thing by internalizing the cost of the harm into its price. Okay, that's a bit of a mouthful, but in other words, while subsidizing research and development can do some good, it pales in compared to the power of the market. The key component of either a cap-and-trade system or a proper carbon tax is the price signal sent to both energy suppliers and this is really key, consumers. Suppliers see the long-term cost of carbon-based energy rise and act accordingly, both by investing in research and development and implementing low-carbon energy sources. But the price signals also get sent to us, the consumer, who, through billions of decisions at the personal and household level, lower the amount of energy used. It is these price signals that target both supplier and consumers that lower our emissions. And it is because Lomborg's plan doesn't target both sides of the market that it is inadequate. And now a quick update on the Cuccinelli debacle. But first, a quick recap. Cuccinelli is the Attorney General of Virginia, and he launched a suit against Michael Mann, creator of the hockey stick graph, who is now at Penn State, but was at the University of Virginia. Cuccinelli claims that Mann misused grant money by conducting fraudulent science. The problem is that of the five grants listed by Cuccinelli, four are federal grants outside his jurisdiction, and the one that is within his jurisdiction predates the Virginia Fraud Against Taxpayer Act, and that act is not retroactive. The other problem is that Cuccinelli has no evidence against Mann, only that he doesn't like Mann's work on climate. And now, a judge has agreed and thrown Cuccinelli's request out the window, saying that none of the evidence Cuccinelli has produced so far indicates that any fraud was committed. Score one for reason and sanity. Oh, and justice too. And now it's time for John Cook's Skeptic Debunk of the Week.
There seems to be an obsession about Arctic sea ice on climate blogs, with every twist and turn breathlessly monitored, especially in September as we approach the summer minimum. Mostly, the focus is on sea ice extent. This is the amount of ocean where ice covers at least 15% of the surface. So sea ice extent looks at just the thin shell of ice on the ocean's surface. This doesn't tell us how thick the ice is, or exactly how much ice there is in total. Sea ice consists of thin first-year ice and thicker multi-year ice. Every year, as the North Pole heads into winter, first-year ice forms only to melt again in summer. So sea ice extent bounces up and down each year, driven by temperature. But it's also affected by wind, cloud cover, and ocean currents. The result is we see a lot of variability from year to year, depending on weather conditions. In the summer of 2007, sea ice extent fell to a record low. The dramatic drop was due to several factors: long-term warming, wind conditions, and unusually sunny weather in 2007. Over the next few years, sea ice extent bounced back a little. Unsurprisingly, this had some people saying Arctic sea ice was all recovered and back to normal. But it's not appropriate to draw conclusions about the health of Arctic sea ice based on a few years' data, particularly with sea ice extent, which shows so much variability from year to year. You need to look at the long-term trend, which shows a decrease of about 5% of sea ice cover per decade. But even while sea ice extent went up slightly from 2007 to 2009, what was happening underneath was more important. Arctic sea ice is getting thinner. Multi-year ice is melting, which is important because it makes up most of the sea ice. Even over those few years when sea ice extent was going up, the ice was thinning underneath. In 2010, the total amount of Arctic sea ice dropped dramatically, hitting a record low. So if someone tells you Arctic sea ice is recovering, remind them that sea ice exists in three dimensions, not two. When you look at the full picture, the total amount of sea ice is still falling, and this year is at its lowest level in recorded history.
John Mashey just released a meticulously detailed report on the denier-favorite Wedgman Report on the hockey stick. It is available at deepclimate.org. Now, as I mentioned, it's meticulously detailed and long. Thankfully, John provides good summaries, but I haven't yet delved into it. So I don't have anything to say just quite yet, but I should by next week. That's it for this week's show. Show notes will be posted at irregularclimate.com. Also at the website, we have plenty of RSS feeds for subscribing to the podcast. We're also available in the iTunes Music Store and the Zune Marketplace. We have links to our Twitter and Facebook page, so you can follow us and send us feedback. Tell us what we are doing well and what we need to work harder on. Also, if you feel so inclined and want to support the podcast, you can donate to Irregular Climate via PayPal. The links are all on the website. But if you are unable or unwilling to donate, please continue to download and listen. That in and of itself supports the show and helps it grow. I am Dan Mutal. You can follow me online at ofdan.ca, where you can see a link to my blog, my Twitter feed, my Flickr feed, and everything else I do online. Thanks, and until next week, try and stay regular.